Hello and welcome to the Diz Dads Podcast Midweek Destinations and Diversions Show. It's the Dad Show, your hump day Disney vacation fix. The Dad Show is brought to you by Kingdom Strollers. Kingdom Strollers is Orlando's premium stroller and crib rental vendor. Why pay more for a less comfortable, less versatile stroller in the theme parks? Make your reservation at kingdomstrollers.com. You'll pay less for the rental, and they'll deliver the stroller of your choice to your resort and pick it up from the resort at the end of your vacation for free. Kingdom Strollers, your first choice for Orlando's stroller rentals and an authorized Walt Disney World stroller vendor. I pick things back up with Mark Harbison as we continue to discuss his road trip with his family across the Great Plains. Where we left off last week, the family had just completed a caving adventure in the Black Hills. You've got a pretty big drive ahead of you here as you head out of the Black Hills, right?
Yeah, and we're heading into Nebraska now, which is another new state for us. I tried to research our route again and find as many interesting and exciting things to see in Nebraska to break up the drive and get out. Here's what I came up with. So yeah, it was going to be a struggle. The best I could do was that we stopped at Carhenge. Now, I don't know if you've ever heard of Carhenge.
Being a Midwesterner, I've actually heard of Carhenge before.
Okay. Every once in a while, you see it on a Travel Channel show or something where they're pointing out cheesy roadside attractions.
And that Carhenge is about the cheesiest.
Yes, it is. There's no defending Carhenge.
It's the Velveeta of roadside attractions.
Yeah, we'll go with it. The only thing I could say to my wife as we drove up there was, we'd been in the car for a few hours and it's a hot, sunny day. It's basically flat farmland in Nebraska. We stopped there and you walk around Carhenge. And for those of you who don't know, it's basically a full-scale recreation of Stonehenge from England, but with cars.
Yeah, made out of junked cars.
Yes. So you look at it and all I can think is, sometimes these trip report chapters really just write themselves. So, you can imagine it with, just getting the patriotic, like a battle hymn or the Republic in the background and saying, this is America, and if we want to recreate Stonehenge with a 1958 Buick Skylark, we're going to do it. I'll say again, just it has value as a 10-minute stop to just stretch your legs and get out of the car.
And maybe get a few pictures. I mean, come on. It is just goofy enough that it's worth having pictures of.
Yes, it's definitely not for people who do not have a sense of humor.
Look, you're not going to go and explore it and learn any great lesson about the human condition from Carhenge.
Yes. Right. But you're not going to get any great lessons about the human condition from a Naked Gun movie either. And I spent plenty of hours of life watching them. Yeah. So if you can appreciate a certain level of stupidity and goofiness, then it's right up your alley. Again, that's probably more time than it's worth. But we did stop at Scott's Bluff for the night in Nebraska. And there's another national monument there. It's basically it's a bluff. It's a mountain formation. They named Scott's Bluff after a guy who died there, on the Oregon Trail. It's preserved as a national monument because it was one of the major landmarks on the Oregon Trail, for people going out west. They knew that they were finally through Nebraska and the endless plains when they saw Scott's Bluff.
Okay. Yeah, and I guess it makes a certain amount of sense because, you know, being a rather isolated sort of mountain structure in the middle of the plains, it would kind of stand up and be easy to see, too.
Yep, that's it. Yeah. So a lot of the national park site there, the visitor center, a lot of it just has to do with the history of the migration west on the Oregon Trail.
Okay. And so no one died of dysentery there?
No, not in our family.
Good.
That was a good thing. After so many days of peanut butter and Nutella, you might have thought otherwise, but we survived. I can't really give you a whole lot of excitement for the next day. It was just an all-day drive across Nebraska. I think when I posted about it on Facebook, I said, let us never speak of this again. And here I am violating that. So we did make it to Omaha in the evening, and we were impressed with Omaha. We thought it was a nice little city. We had dinner in the old market area, which had cobblestone streets, and some of the old city buildings had restaurants in them and all, and that was kind of a neat area to visit. And they had a nice riverfront park right on the Missouri River as well. That has a nice little pedestrian bridge that takes you across the river into Iowa. And we had planned absolutely zero stops in Iowa. But our rule for visiting every state is to take credit for being in the state, then your feet actually have to hit the ground, the soil of that state, to, you know, to count being there. So
that's a reasonable minimum requirement.
Yeah, it rules out the airport layover. You know, you can't count airports.
Right.
So we thought, well, this was our way to cheat across the border and get Iowa. So we took the pedestrian bridge and walked over and stood on the ground for probably about 3 seconds or so.
Just enough to absorb its Iowa-ness.
Yes, yes. I feel 0.1% more Iowan now than I used to.
I can teach you something.
Okay.
From Iowa, you're actually Iwegian.
Oh, really?
You really are.
I did not know that.
You'll have we should have talked before you left because, you know, that's an important tip for the kids.
It is. Well, I'll have to talk to them about that now. Now, do you know what they call people from Delaware?
Escapees?
Now, I don't know if you ever watched Taxi, but there's a great quote from Christopher Lloyd in that one.
Uh-huh.
He said he's watching TV and he was watching a debate on whether they should call them Delawareans or Delawareites. And he said, my personal favorite, Delaweenies, never had a chance.
He didn't pull the diz dads.
That's right. So most people will call them Delawareans, but because of that episode of Taxi, I've always gone with Delaweenies.
Works for me. All right, so you got your quick touch in Iowa. You had a nice, if I remember right, a good dinner in Omaha?
Yeah, we did. We had a nice Italian place. It was called the Old Spaghetti Works, and that was in that old market section I mentioned. We enjoyed it there.
All right, and then from Iowa, what's up next?
Next is Missouri and Kansas. So we are heading straight for Kansas City. The one in Missouri first. And in the research, what I'd found was that there was a World War I museum there, which kind of caught my eye. You know, we've been to a lot of museums and memorials living so close to Washington, D.C. There's plenty to see there. But that, I think, is the only World War I museum in the entire country.
Yeah, it is.
And that's kind of like the war nobody ever talks about. So I felt, well, that'll be a little different. That's something I can't see anywhere else. Because when I looked at Kansas City, it looked like there was a lot to do in the city. But a lot of it was, you know, science museums or aquariums or things like that, where I can do that in other cities or do that in cities that are even close to my house. So when you're looking for something unique, I thought, well, World War I, that's the only one. Maybe we'll check that one out. And that was really well worth the time. It was excellent. very well done. It explained the war very well, as best as you can. It's a pretty complicated war in terms of the motivations of everybody involved.
Right.
And it didn't have a really clean ending either. It just kind of, everybody agreed to stop fighting for a while and go lick their wounds. And then eventually they got angry and started World War II again because they hadn't really solved anything. So, but it does a good job of kind of explaining that and how the events went. There's a lot of authentic memorabilia from the war there. And we were impressed. We thought it was really well worth the visit.
And, you know, we're now talking about my neck of the woods a little bit. You and I had connected and were communicating back and forth during this. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to get down there to meet you at the Liberty Memorial. It was a little ironic because, you know, until I quit my job to run the, or, you know, my hourly job, my old job to run the travel agency, my office was like across the street from Liberty Memorial. So I didn't join you down there, but you went from Liberty Memorial and you squeezed in one more little quick visit because Liberty Memorial is right next to the Kansas City Federal Reserve Building.
Yes. Yeah. And they have a little money museum inside. It's not big at all. It's maybe, you know, three rooms.
Which, given your timing, is a good thing.
Yes, it was. We needed a quick visit, and it fit the bill, and it was free, so the price was right. And it just basically kind of gives you an overview of the Federal Reserve System and how our currency is made, how it's taken into and out of circulation, so on and so forth. And that, again, the exhibits were pretty well done. They kind of dumb it down so somebody like me can understand it. You know, and
Drew walking around with being awfully proud of his bag of money.
Oh yeah, that's probably the best part. And I don't know why more people don't go because they give everybody a bag of money at the end of the tour, which is pretty neat. Now it is shredded, so.
How much time do the older kids spend, you know, with scotch tape on the floor of the next hotel room?
They haven't tried it yet, at least not that I know of. Although, to be honest, I look in their rooms and it's very possible they could have tried it because...
You just wouldn't notice.
I can't, yeah. There's shreds of something on the floor. but yeah, anyway, that was just a neat little visit. They even had a display that showed you what different amounts of money look like. They had a wall display that showed you stacks of $100 bills and so this would be $1 million, this would be $10 million, and so on and so forth. So just... neat little things like that.
Right, ways to visualize those huge amounts of money.
Right, right. The other little neat visit we made was in the middle of the day. We figured the kids were sick of peanut butter and jelly at that point, and we found Fritz's restaurant by. And the whole reason we went there was because we found out that that was a place where your food is delivered to your table by train.
That's right.
And we thought, well, this we got to see. So... You know, I'd say the food was just okay. It wasn't anything special. It's just burgers and fries and that sort of thing.
Right.
But the delivery system with the train was ingenious. And everybody, from the kids through the adults, was so fascinated with it. It's just unique, and it was worth going just for that experience, just to see it. So we were glad we did that.
Okay, so describe the system, right, so that people can kind of visualize it. Because when you say your food is delivered by a train, you know, we're not talking about a you know, an Amtrak locomotive.
No. Basically what you do is you sit at your table, and instead of a waiter coming and taking your order, they have a phone, and you place your order by phone. You call into the kitchen, and I'm sure it lights up what number table you're at so they know which table placed the order. So then... what they do is they put all your food when it's ready into a basket, and there's a track several feet above your heads that runs around the perimeter of the building. And there's a locomotive that runs on that track, and it's got an arm that hangs down, cantilevered under it, and that it's got a tray underneath, and they put the food on the tray so that it's hanging on this arm underneath the train track. And so then the locomotive runs around, and it's carrying the tray above your heads. And then they must program the number of the table so that when it reaches your table, a little switch comes down underneath the track that's kind of a blocker. And as the train goes by, that blocker hits the tray of food and stops it there onto the tray that is above your table. And then the system lowers it down to your table. So it was a pretty ingenious system. We thought that was really neat.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've been several times, and it's still fun to watch.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody was getting a kick out of it. So even the grown-ups. So it didn't get old watching the trains.
Yeah, no. No, it doesn't. All right, so you had your lunch at Fritz's, and then you had the misfortune of running into some other folks for dinner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, beggars can't be choosers, so. no, I think, you know, obviously you live in that area, so we thought, well, if we're going to be in Kansas City, then we got to try and meet up. And so you graciously accepted our company and didn't try and hide or suddenly make other plans, and we appreciated that. although your daughter did get out of town, so she was probably the smart one.
Yeah, she was off at camp and was I have to tell you that, like, you know, she got back from camp, what, you know, not even a month ago now, and she's complained maybe half a dozen times that, you know, well, because she missed out being here when another Harry Potter musical fan was here, and, you know, I mean, it's like she and Sarah would have been off in their own world.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I think they would have hit it off like gangbusters. Just they would have been on Harry Potter all night, and we never would have seen them again.
Yeah, exactly.
I know she was very impressed with your daughter's room.
Yes. The Harry Potter-themed room that she and my wife, you know, basically that's all Michaela and my wife. I don't have any of that skill. But anyway, so we did have a good time. We did the, you know, traditional Kansas City barbecue feast. Sort of sampled from several of my Kansas City barbecue favorite haunts.
Mm-hmm. That was very impressive, I got to say. We were we came in and we knew that we wanted barbecue for dinner, because when you're in Kansas City, you got to get barbecue. I'm sure it's a rule somewhere. And so when we brought up that idea, I think I remember messaging you at one point, and you said, well, we could do sort of an Iron Chef type thing and get a barbecue from a whole bunch of places and test them all against each other. And I think I was just like, I like the way you think, sir. So I don't know how you did it, getting to all those places and getting the food, but that was quite the spread that you put out. So I guess I need to put the word out there to any DizDads. If you're ever in Kansas City, this is the guy to see.
Well, see, I love it because it's a great excuse for me to get to sample all of my favorites, right? Because otherwise you got to choose, and that's no fun.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
So, so we had a great time. We, you know, really nice to meet your whole family. They were great to be around. We had a lot of fun with them. I think John ended up having a lot of fun with them too, even though he maybe was a little surprised that he had fun. He was being a little shy when you arrived, but
he was
warmed up.
Yeah, they had some good Nerf gun battles going. So, I think everybody had a great time. We enjoyed your wife's company. She kept us entertained while you're off getting the barbecue.
That's right. I had to run the circuit for the barbecue.
Yeah. The barbecue was lived up to its reputation. That was really, we still talk about it.
Hey, anytime. Come on back out. We got it for you.
Stuff. Thank you very much.
So you weren't done even after gorging on Fritz's and barbecue.
Yeah.
You were, you know, headed on east to the gateway to the west.
Yeah. Right?
A little odd there. Yeah, we're heading east to the gateway to the west.
We were doing it backwards. We were like the people on the Oregon Trail that turned around and said, you know what?
Nah.
Philadelphia was pretty nice. I'm heading back there. we went into St. Louis, and that's about a 4-hour drive, so that took most of the morning. But we went in, and in order to get my son a little bit of a baseball fix, we took a tour of the Cardinal Stadium there. And we enjoyed that. We usually we enjoy the baseball stadium tours because you generally get to go on the field, you know, or at least go in the dugout and that sort of thing, and see some parts of the stadium that you wouldn't normally get to see at a game. And they're generally a lot cheaper than the games. And for 5-6 people that I got to buy tickets for, that counts for a lot. So, sure. unfortunately, we got kind of the trainee tour guide on that one. So it wasn't, I think, as exciting as it could have been. And there was a guy who was kind of, I think the trainer was walking behind us. And evaluating him. And at one point they asked him to talk about Stan Musial. And suddenly, you know, the story time opened up and he was just full of stories. And we were just sitting there like, oh, why couldn't we have this guy for the tour?
Oh, wow.
But it is what it is, you know. So at least my son was happy that we got to see one baseball stadium on this trip.
Sure.
And then we figured we couldn't go to St. Louis without going up in the Arch. So we had planned to do that.
Right now, you had done some great, you know, national park tour kinds of things and all kinds of different accesses, and you had the, you know, the funky, you know, elevator made by people who didn't know how to build an elevator already out in North Dakota. But having done that elevator, what did you think of the elevator in the Arch?
Again, I was absolutely fascinated by it. It was just such a neat experience. I think generally, with the Arch, I would advise people to do rope drop again, because we were there in the afternoon and it was a zoo as far as the number of people. Yeah. I had made reservations online ahead of time. You can do that for the Arch. And I can't remember exactly what time my tour was. I think like 4 o'clock or so. And I don't think we actually got into the tram to go up to the top until about 5. So, and all that time was spent going through security and waiting in lines and so on and so forth. So, it was definitely a process to get all the way through. But being an engineer, the Arch itself and the design of it just fascinated me. You know, they had some material on how it was built, and they said they basically started on both sides and hoped they met in the middle.
Yeah.
Which is a little scary,
yeah.
But they did. And it really is an iconic structure. I remember that night driving away from the city, you look at back and it is a really striking skyline with the Arch there. It really hits you. So it's definitely a great work of art, I think, that achieves the effect that they wanted. The tram.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Talk
about the tram.
Yeah, it's basically kind of an elaborate set of balls on a chain. And again, it was fascinating because I think they designed and built this in something like 2 weeks. And it's the original design to take you up. But it's basically a little pod that has 5 seats in it, and it's kind of cramped. You have to crouch over to get in. They're not real big. And everybody sits real close. And then they shut the door on you, and then the chain basically gets pulled up along the length of the Arch to go up to the top. It's about 630 feet high, and you're traveling along that Arch shape. And so somehow there's a mechanism in that car that every so often you can feel it adjust. It kind of kicks down a notch to make sure that you're still sitting straight up and down through the whole trip, no matter what the position you are related to the Arch. And I just found that to be really fascinating how they figured it out and made it work.
Yeah, it really is sort of amazing. And I'm somebody, I mean, I'm claustrophobic and I'm scared of heights. And I still went up in the Arch because it's just too cool not to.
Yeah. I think my son, David, was along with you. He was really nervous about going up that high because it's pretty tall structure when you get up close.
Well, and here's the thing about it, right? Not only is it really impressively tall, and I don't know if you did it, one of my favorite things to do at the Arch is if you go to the, like, just inside the leg of the Arch and lay down on the ground looking up, it's just a really cool perspective.
Yeah,
we have that leg of the Arch going up over your head.
Okay. I didn't actually lie down and do that, but I remember standing in a similar place and looking up at it. And,
Yeah,
it's neat. There's nothing up there but sky and clouds and this Arch. So.
Right. So, and there's that piece to it. And then how windy a day was it when you were there?
It was pretty calm.
Oh, okay.
So I had heard stories about the sway. Right. And again, you know, it was interesting. Like, I think my wife and I heard the story about that at the same time. Somebody else asked, like, oh, it could be swaying up there. And to me, I'm thinking, well, yeah, it's designed this way. You know,
right.
Of course, all skyscrapers are designed that way. So I'm thinking purely from a logical perspective. I'm like, yeah, it's going to sway. Okay, that's fine. Wasn't bothering me at all. And my wife was like, really? It's going to sway? So I think she was very happy that it was a very calm day. I don't recall actually feeling it move at all while we were up there.
Okay. Yeah, it must have been unusually calm. Every time I've been up there, you could feel it moving.
Oh, okay. And I'm sure that's a little unsettling.
For somebody who's afraid, who's claustrophobic and afraid of heights, yes.
Yeah, that could bother you. That was probably another little surprise. Once you get to the top, it's not very big, the space.
Well, exactly, right? It's narrow.
It's narrow. It's the windows are tiny, and you kind of have to fight your way in to be able to see out of them and lean over in order to see anything. So yeah, it's a little bit. I can see where if you're claustrophobic, that would bother you up there because it's not a huge space and they're packing people in. But I think it was definitely one of the more memorable experiences on the trip. I think everybody was just impressed with the design of it, the structure of it, the way they get you up and down. And even David wasn't too sure, but he was glad he did it.
Cool. So kind of a big, exciting day in St. Louis comparative to some of the other stuff, right? You had a lot going on there at the Arch. And did you get a chance to check out the Museum of Western Expansion down underneath the Arch at all, or...
It was still under renovation.
Oh,
they're
okay.
Kind of rebuilding the whole waterfront park there.
Okay.
So they had some temporary exhibits over in the old courthouse, and we were able to walk through those. But I think that's just, you know, minor stuff compared to the actual museum. I think that's all that work is supposed to be done sometime next year.
Mm-hmm.
So we missed out a little bit on that.
Okay. And anything else in St. Louis? You had the ballpark, you had the Arch.
Yeah, that was pretty much it. And then okay. We were heading through Illinois towards Wisconsin.
Frozen tundra.
The frozen tundra. We did have a stop in Chicago. We spent most of the day at the Museum of Science and Industry there. And we were thinking back, and that's actually the first destination that we've made a repeat visit to in our travels other than Disney World. Because we'd been there about 5 years ago, and I think that might be our favorite museum in the entire country. It's just really cool.
Yeah, it really is. And there's so much there.
Yeah.
It's certainly easy to make a return trip because you're not going to see it all in one, you know, visit anyway.
Yeah. Yep. It'd be really hard to cover the entire museum. You know, they've got an entire German submarine, a U-boat in the basement that you can tour, IMAX movies. They've got a coal mine that, you know, is a huge exhibit that you walk through and they take you on an actual mine train. It's just so well done. And there's so many fascinating exhibits. It's just well worth it.
There were no dwarfs in their mine train.
True, true. But there wasn't a really short roller coaster either. We didn't have to wait 2 hours in line to get in there either. So,
that's right.
But yeah, it's a neat exhibit. So it's such a cool museum. We thought, you know what, if we're going to stop anywhere in Chicago, that's the place to do it. So we didn't regret doing that again.
Right, right. No, it doesn't sound like it at all. And you were on your way to see Wisconsin and the Summer Clan.
Yes, and I have to call it mostly Wisconsin. And there's an inside joke there because the Summers stole our idea. I mean, they're trying to do the same thing we are in terms of seeing all 50 states. And so they were they came east a couple of years ago, and they had asked us to break the news to their kids about their trip to the East Coast. And so we recorded a short video for them, and our kids made the announcement. They said, "You guys are coming to Delaware." They said, you know, and you're going to Washington, D.C. and Philadelphia and New York, but mostly Delaware, you know. And so the phrase mostly Delaware was coined at that point. And so they kept – they said their kids just ran around the house the rest of the day going, mostly Delaware.
Lucky
and
them.
So, you know, we gave them T-shirts that said mostly Delaware and all the whole nine yards. And so when they learned we were coming to Wisconsin, obviously this became the mostly Wisconsin trip. So I think that's, you know, in honor of the Muppet 3D film, we'll say we visited the entire Midwest, but mostly Wisconsin. So
yes.
So we did meet up with the Summers, and we lived to tell the tale. They were wonderful hosts. I'm kind of disappointed because I'm having trouble thinking of anything bad to say about them.
Oh, that's okay. We'll just come. We'll use our imaginations and come up with our own.
There you go. We can make stuff up. He's not going to listen to this. Yeah, they. We've gotten to be good friends with the Summers over the years through the DizDads, which has been really neat. It's a neat feeling to know that we have good friends in these various places all over the country. It's pretty cool in the age of internet friendships to see that come about. So we've enjoyed their company, and we actually, when we got to Wisconsin, they had our two older boys, Scotty and Dave, spent the night with their son, Evan. They camped out in their basement there in Wisconsin. So I think they stayed up probably till 3 a.m. playing video games and eating junk food. And you know what? It wasn't our house, so we didn't care.
And it probably meant they slept in the car the next day.
Yeah. So we had a blast. They took us. We went to the Machine Shed for breakfast, which is kind of a Midwest, little bit of a chain. They've got a few locations around. We'd seen that on the Travel Channel years ago because they make cinnamon rolls that are as big as your head. So naturally, as soon as we saw that, we're like, well, we got to eat there. So we crossed that one off the list. Barry took us to his family farm, and we basically just drove four-wheelers around the farm fields for a good portion of the day. For some reason, they let the kids drive the four-wheelers. And I'm happy to report that Scotty happened. He managed to get the four-wheeler stuck in the mud.
Impressive.
With Barry's wife in the vehicle, and she had to coach him out of it. So I'm sure many thoughts were crossing her mind at that point. Like, why did I agree to meet these people here? So we got some good video. I can say that. Just spent the whole day hanging out with them, and we ended up – by that evening, we were in Green Bay. So you probably know where I'm going with that.
I can hear the echoes already.
So yeah, Lambeau Field was the next item on the itinerary, and we did a tour there. We'd wanted to see it because, you know, we've been to some of the iconic baseball stadiums like Wrigley Field and Fenway Park. We've done tours and seen those historic places. But for football, I think Lambeau is really the only stadium that kind of has that same status as being the historic, iconic stadium, you know.
Right.
The rest of them are kind of modern corporate palaces. So that was the draw to see Lambeau. And the tour there was really well done. We had a much better guide than we had in St. Louis. You know, got to see some neat parts of the stadium. We got to go down at field level. There's one part where they take you through the tunnel that the Packers go through to enter the field.
Uh-huh.
And they set you up beautifully. The tour guide says, now, if you use your imagination, can imagine, you know, just think that this is a January Sunday, a playoff game. There are 80,000 fans out there screaming, go Pack, go, and cheering you on as you enter the field. Just use your imagination and you can almost hear them. And so then he hits the door to go through the tunnel. And of course, they start piping in crowd noise on the speakers.
Right.
You know, it's totally cheesy. And we fell hook, line, and sinker for it. Like, this is awesome. You know? So it was great. we really enjoyed that. Had a great time with that tour. So that was well worth seeing.
Excellent. Excellent. And I believe we're reaching sort of nearing the end, right? Of the pretty much.
Have I talked long enough? Are you still awake? Which is impressive.
Oh, yeah. I have some coffee here.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. You can send some emails.
So I got to ask you, as we're getting close to the end here, you know, looking back on the trip, you know, I always have a few kind of wrap up kinds of things that are running through my head. And obviously it's a little different when we're talking about a road trip versus, you know, highlights of theme parks or whatever. But,
yeah.
You know, if you were to identify maybe, you know, two or three sites that you saw, and I want to put aside kind of people you met for now and just focus on the things that you saw. What were the two or three things that you saw that you most most appreciate having seen? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think the Black Hills area itself was worth the visit because there were so many things to see, and there was a variety there, you know, all within pretty short driving distance. It was neat to see. I think the missile site to me stands out as just being so unique and so different and so worth the visit that I think if I had to pick a single Black Hills site, that one impressed me the most. Okay. But the whole area was worth visiting. I think the Midwest cities, by and large, we were pretty impressed. They were nice. The parts we visited were clean. There seemed to be a lot to do. People were nice. Obviously, in Kansas City, the food was great. I think Kansas City was one place where we thought, you know, we wish we had a little bit of more time because it looked like there was so much to do in the city that we could have easily spent more time there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
St. Louis, the Arch, really stood out to us as being well worth the visit. And then I'd say Lambeau Field, I think, really stuck out as being a neat place to visit. And we were glad we spent the time.
And then the other question I had is, you know, obviously you've already inspired the Summer family to follow in your footsteps. If somebody else was thinking about doing this kind of an extended, you know, family road trip, what are a couple pieces of advice you would give them when they're, you know, looking at doing this kind of a trip?
Well, I'd say, first of all, it's know thyself. Because I fully understand that this kind of a trip is not for everybody. There are some people that just can't stand being in the car that long. So I'd say, you know, if this doesn't sound like it's for you, then it's probably not for you. You know, you have to commit to it. We covered, I think, 3,600 miles on this trip. So, you know, that's a lot of time. And there's some very boring drives on this one. But I'd also say the flip side of that is don't let the drives scare you. Because there are so many great things to see in the country that just happen to be in remote places. And so we've tried to tell our kids that if you want to see, say, Yellowstone or the Grand Canyon, then you've got to make the effort to get there, you know, and, you know, you've got to go through the work, but then seeing these sites and having that experience is your reward for doing all that work. And I don't think at any point we've ever felt like the payoff was not worth the effort. So I think that we've always been impressed everywhere we've gone. And same on this trip. There's so many different things to see and unique things to see that you can't see anywhere else. And if you're willing to do the work and take the time to see them, then you can have a lot of memorable experiences. Practically, I think everybody eventually gets tired of driving. So it helps when you're planning out to kind of build in some, you know, you can have a hard driving day where you cover hundreds of miles, but then you know your family, know when you need to back off mm-hmm, and give them mm-hmm. a break. It's vital, I think, to plan some breaks in there. At one point, I know after that drive across North Dakota, when I was searching for hotels, I purposely chose one that had a big water slide in the pool. And we just decided to order pizza at the hotel and have a pizza and pool party there because mm-hmm. I knew the kids would have been sick of the car. and they, you know, the hotel is, the pool is going to be a draw for any kid. You know, for some reason, any hotel, if it has a pool, the kids want to be in it. There could be a dead body floating in it. The kids will still be like, dude, can we go in the pool? So, you know, you find little places like that, like you can give them your own reward at the end of the long drive. Say, hey, you know, when we get there, we're just going to spend the rest of the night in the pool. And that kind of helps get them through the day, things like that. So you parcel out some rewards. Or like I said, eventually, you know, we did the peanut butter and jelly, obviously, to save money. But after 4 days of that, then you can plan in a break, say, okay, let's get fast food for lunch or something just to break up the monotony. And I try and combine those with a long driving day to, A, give us a break from the car, and B, give them a reward for sitting that long.
Sure. All right. And then I guess the last thing, the thing to close on, what's one thing that you learned on the way that you wish you knew before you learned?
Well, I learned that apparently it's airline policy to get your bags to your destination as soon as possible. And I really wish I'd known that, say at about 8 o'clock on that Tuesday night. That would be a good thing. That was the only really rough part of the trip where we just stumbled at the start.
Yeah, right.
You know, we lost a couple of days, but once we got out there, everything went really smoothly and we saw a lot of great things. And I can't say that there were any lessons learned that, you know, from mistakes or things I forgot or anything along those lines. I think everything went pretty well from that point on.
Great. So I guess the last question then is, what's up next?
What's up next? Well, myself, my wife, the older kids, as traveling together, we've hit 40 states now, so we're getting close. The next big hole we have on our map is the Deep South. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to try and hit Texas and New Mexico over spring break next year, mm-hmm. Just because I don't want to be in Texas in the middle of the summer.
I don't blame
you. But then again, I'm still going to do it to myself because we'll try and cover the rest of the Deep South over the middle of the summer. So it'll still be hot. But we won't be in, you know, a desert.
Right.
So we'll probably do something like a road trip for that to cover the states like Tennessee, Arkansas, Louisiana, Alabama, that whole area. We haven't hit that yet. So I think that'll be the effort next year, is hitting those southern states. If we get them all, we'll be up to 47. And the only states we'll have left after that are Oregon, Washington, and Alaska. Uh-huh. So the plan from, we've already projected this out, you know, in looking at 2018 and further, we'll have a Pacific Northwest trip, and we'll get Oregon and Washington and hit some sites up there. Then we may need to take a break because Andrew needs his first trip to Disney World at some point.
Right.
So we've got to put that in there somewhere and figure out when that'll happen. So I haven't decided if that'll come before the Pacific Northwest or after yet. I'm kind of waiting to see when they announce that Star Wars Land is going to open.
Okay.
Because I'm thinking it probably makes sense to wait for that and Toy Story Land to open before I do that next trip to Disney with him. So we'll just play that by ear, I guess.
Right.
And then my daughter graduates high school in 2020, and that'll coincide that summer after she graduates will be hopefully when we hit Alaska and finish off the 50th state.
And so by the time she graduates, she will have hit all 50.
Yes.
Is the goal.
That's the goal.
Excellent. All right. Well, we look forward to hearing about the next group. You know, maybe next time you'll have a residual southern drawl.
I don't know about that, but you know, if we can at least get some fried chicken, then I'd be happy. I'm a sucker for fried chicken.
Simple goals.
I don't know if I'll ever be converted to grits, though. I missed the boat on that one.
All right. Well, Mark, thanks again for coming on the show and sharing your adventure with us.
Well, thanks for indulging me and sitting through all that. And I won't blame you in the least if you edit out about, you know, 3/4 of it. So.
One little spark of inspiration is at the heart of all creation, right at the start of everything that's new. One little spark lights up for you. So glad you could come along. I am the Dream Finder. Musical notes, what delightful melodies those will make. I love these flights of fancy, searching the countryside for sounds, colors, ideas, anything that sparks the imagination. A sunbeam, that's a good one. Everything that I can collect can inspire amazing and marvelous new ideas. Never know what kind of figment you may come up with. Here's my favorite. Two tiny wings, eyes big and yellow, horns of a steer, but a lovable fella. From head to tail, he's royal purple pigment. And there, voila, you've got a figment of imagination.